Hi, this is Griselda Togobo of Awobi Consulting. In this session, I have the honor of interviewing the very lovely James Clare of Passive Panda. James has managed the seemingly impossible in a short space of time. He's built a full-time income from part-time blogging. He's an entrepreneur, founder of Passive Panda and the Remora Method. And he also plays around with travel photography. Welcome, James, and thank you for taking part in the series.
Hey, Griselda. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So can you just tell me a little bit more about yourself, what you do, and how you do it?
Sure. So most of my work right now is focused on PassivePanda.com and the Remora Method. The Remora Method is my main course, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on. But you know, when I got started, the main goal for me was to build a business that could pay for me going to medical school. My main passion is in health and medicine, and it's where I feel like I can really make the most difference. But right. In the United States, you know, a lot of physicians have to take out really large loans or take on a lot of debt to pay for medical school. And once I finished grad school, I went to business school. And once I finished getting my MBA, I worked in a medical practice for a little while I was there. And I was just like, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. You can imagine, you know, a lot of doctors, they get done, they spend 5 years paying their loans off, then they look around and they say, well, this doctor has a big house and a nice car, so I would like a big house and a nice car. And then they take out another loan and then, you know, just spirals on. And so I figured one of the best ways to avoid that would be to build a business that could pay for me going before I went. And then there are other benefits too. You know, when you start a business online, you learn how to spread a message. You learn how to get people rallied around a particular cause, or how to, you know, build a following, so to speak. And yeah. So it took me a little while to figure that out, but over the last year or so, it's gone pretty well. And now, you know, now I have a full-time business. So,
yes, I've been reading your stories online, and it all sounds really exciting. How did you make that shift from medicine to running your own business?
Yeah, so I was a science guy in undergrad. I was a biomechanics major. And then once I finished, I went to business school. And so while I was there, I studied strategy and also a little bit of health policy, but mostly strategy. And while I was in business school, I had the opportunity to work in the Center for Entrepreneurship. And so I started, you know, being exposed to a lot of these entrepreneurs who were starting businesses. There were a lot of tech businesses in this particular, you know, this particular department. And my job was to analyze some of the venture capital investments, some of the angel investors, and see, like, what are they investing in? Where's all that funding going? What are those companies doing now? And as I did this for a year or two, I started to get more interested in the idea of running my own business. And once I finished business school, I said, you know what, why don't I go ahead and give it a try? And I figured at this point, I really didn't have anything to lose because, you know, if I started a business and it worked and, you know, and I built up an income, I could sell it or use that to pay for me going to medical school. And if it didn't work, then I didn't have a family at the time or any, you know, or children or anything. So it was like, well, I could just go get a regular job. So for me, it was sort of a good position like that. And that's sort of how I slowly made the transition. Right. But there's still been, you know, tons of challenges along the way.
So medical school is no longer in the cards, I take it.
No, it definitely still is. My plan right now is to, you know, when I started, I gave myself about 2 to 3 years to build a business and then either sell it or get some, you know, outsource myself from it, essentially, to have enough employees that I wouldn't have to do anything myself. And right now I'm about 18 months in, and it's definitely on track. And so my goal sometime in the next year to year and a half is either to sell it outright or to outsource myself entirely from the business. And part of that has to do with some of the decisions I've made in the last 6 months, and we can talk about those more as well, to stabilize revenue, to, you know, develop a little bit more of a recurring revenue method and things along those lines. And yeah, we can talk about that too if you want, but that's the basic plan right now. I mean, my goal is still – I'm still very much in save the world mode, so to speak. And
me too.
Yeah. And I think that going to medical school is one of the best ways for me to do that. But I've also realized that you don't really need permission to spread a message or an idea. And yes. So I'm going to be doing work in health and medicine online at the same time.
So what are some of the things you've done in the last 18 months that you think made the real difference to how you've been able to grow your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a couple different things. I think it's probably best to break it down into two different categories. So you have like strategy, the things that you need to get right. And then you have the tactics, right? That's the stuff that everybody like. I feel like people, a lot of times they want the tactics, but strategy is like really, really important to understand from the start. So to answer your question, there are a couple things. The first thing I think is really important is to know why you're in business. It's really easy. You know, there are a million business problems out there, and there's a million ways to make money or things to solve, products to produce or services to provide. But if you don't really understand at the end of the day why you're doing it, it's really easy to get burnout, because being an entrepreneur is not easy, right? It's not easy to go into business for yourself. It's not easy to maintain the drive to build a business on a day-to-day basis. It's not, you know, it's easy when you get those wins, but the day-to-day grind is the hard part.
Yes.
And for me, the way to get through that day-to-day grind is to understand why you're in business in the first place. And like I said, I have this mission where I know that I want to build a business that can pay for me going to medical school. And I also want to understand how to spread a message and build a following online, because I have some things that, you know, in the near future here, I think I want to say that can improve the state of affairs and improve the health of individuals and also, you know, the world as a whole. And so having that why is really critical for me.
So you're the man on the mission.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's easy to get wrapped up in the branding and be like, I'm a man on a mission and all this stuff, right? And like really feel like you're changing the world. But I think it's also, it's just important day to day to have a mission like that that can drive you.
Because I believe that even though you're on a mission and even though you want to change the world, the first thing you can change is yourself. And if you're able to liberate yourself financially and just be in a place where you're free to help other people, then you can make a bigger contribution to the world.
Oh, absolutely. One of my friends says it really well. He says that there are two things that we're here for in his mind. The first is to be happy, and the second is to help people.
Yes.
And it's really hard to help people if you're not happy first, right? And so that's sort of what you're talking about, right? Like you need to be the one to pick yourself up before you can, you know, help to pick someone else up.
Perfect.
So another strategic thing that I think is important. So the first is know why you're in business. The second is you have to address a need, right? I was just reading a really good, and this will segue into another thing I'm going to talk about, but I was just reading a really good article about copywriting, and the copywriter was saying, I'll talk to my students and I'll ask them, you know, I'm going to say, we're going to sell hot dogs and I will give you any advantage you want compared to the competitors in the market. What are the things that you would want? And when you ask the students that, they always say something like, you know, well, I would want to have the best tasting hot dogs, or I would want to have the cheapest, you know, supplies, or I would want to have the, you know, the best atmosphere in my hot dog shop, or whatever the competitive advantage is.
Yeah.
And he'll come back to them and say, that's fine, you can have all those advantages, but I will absolutely crush all of you because I want one advantage that no one named. And that advantage is a starving crowd. And so the flip here is that, you know, a lot of people think about, well, what is my business going to do? What is, you know, how am I going to address this? How am I going to be unique? All this other stuff. But you have to start strategically with something that people really, really want, right? You want the starving crowd. You want the burning desire that you're going to address. And if you have that, if you understand what the real problem is, then all that other business stuff can figure itself out along the way. But if you're trying to sell something that people aren't starving for, that people have a burning need for, it's so hard because you're not really addressing a need. So I think that was a big strategic play for me, because a lot of what I talk about is how individuals can earn more money. You know, how do you earn $500 more a week? How do you boost your income by $1,000 a month or whatever it may be? And that's a burning need for a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
You know, so if you can have some type of, now, you know, at the same time, I have to be wary because the make money niche is very, you know, it's very scammy in a lot of ways. People are selling all kinds of junk. There's always like the next like quick fix stuff. So I try to make sure I don't talk about, you know, the quickest way to make money or the, you know, get rich quick schemes or, you know, the newest whatever, because most of the principles are the same as they've been for, you know, but so there, you know, there are things to consider there, but you have to have that burning need. So that's the second strategic thing. And it's sort of with the bundle within that is understanding copywriting. You know, I think a lot of people think copywriting is just about writing, but it's really about understanding the customer and understanding their needs. And so I didn't know anything about copywriting when I started, but I've studied a decent amount of it since I've been going. And that's made a big difference for me because it's made it easier for me to understand, all right, this is the real problem you're addressing and this is why it's important. So I would say those are some strategic things that I've done right to grow my business. And that made a big difference.
Because I've been reading your blogs and they just go straight to the point and they give you a lot of value. Would you say that you use those skills in writing your blog as well?
Sure. So it's important to have those things drilled down, right? And to understand why you're in business, to address a need, to know the basic copywriting skills. But it's also important to understand the tactical piece, right? And so that's sort of what you're talking about. One of the tactical things I've tried to do is, you know, everybody says content's king or write better content or all that. And it's definitely true. But one way that's sort of a vague term to just tell someone like write better content. Well, what does that really mean? Well, for me, I'm not like the best writer. It doesn't just like pour right out of my head, but I'm a reviser and a researcher. And so for a particular post, I might spend, I might spend 20 hours on one article if it's long. When you bundle in like all the research and the editing and really making sure, I'll go through and you said like, it's nice to know that you think my articles get to the point because a lot of times I'll try to cut, I'll read through and be like, this sentence, am I really saying something in this sentence or is it just there because I already wrote it? You know what I mean? Am I just keeping it there because I already wrote it down or does it actually provide value? Yeah. So, and that's a lot of work. Like a lot of people don't want to put 20 hours into a blog post. I think that in general, people get value out of that, but that takes a lot of work to do that.
Wow. So if you spend 20 hours on just a blog post, how many hours do you work a week?
It depends. I mean, honestly, I have worked a lot before, I got in a zone there for the first 6 months where I was really pushing it and so when you say how long have you worked during a week, like, I feel like a lot of people like to throw out like, yeah, I work 70 hours a week or 80 hours or whatever. But they might be at work that much, but they're not actually work that much. But I would say, I mean, there have definitely been weeks where I've actually done 60 hours of active work. And that's a lot, but it's easy for me because I don't have to, I don't have to go anywhere. I can work from my laptop, so I can just wake up in the morning, start typing, get something done, and just continue to go. I don't know. But that's another thing. It's really, you have to have that why. You have to care, because if you don't care, then there are people out there who do care and you're going to be competing with them. So yes. If you don't, there's no way that you can match up. Like it makes no sense to put yourself through misery and try to force yourself to work 60 hours a week if you don't really care about it. But if you do care about it, then you're going to want to do a good job because it's important to you. So that chicken or the egg type of thing. But if you have that passion to start with, then it makes the work a lot easier.
The reason why I ask that is that a lot of people just assume, because you hear all these stories of overnight successes and people who have made money within a year, so much money within a year. Some people think it's that easy to put in 9 to 5 and still expect to grow your business to a significant level. So I just want to make it obvious to other people who might be listening, feeling that, oh, I just have to, just put out some blog posts because you need to blog. So I just have to do it, to just realize the amount of effort and time others are putting into building their businesses.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a great point. I played baseball in college and I'm a certified strength conditioning specialist now. So I spend a lot of time, on fitness and health. And like I mentioned, that's a big passion for me. But if you think about exercise, right, like nobody thinks they're going to become like a professional weightlifter, a professional bodybuilder by going to the gym, an hour every 5 days. Right.
Yeah.
So like, you shouldn't think that you're going to be like a professional blogger, have this massive business. You just spend an hour blogging every 5 days. Like it doesn't work. You see, it makes logical sense when you think about it, but it's really easy to get wrapped up in the, all you need is, to do, 4 hours of work a week and you'll be, whatever. It's easy to get wrapped up in the promises, but I think everybody understands logically that it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Okay. That's brilliant. So how long has it taken you to reach that point where you felt like, okay, things are going exactly where I want them to go now, and I just have to keep on doing what I'm doing?
Well, here's, okay, so I have an answer, but here's another thing. So whenever you get to that point where you think, like previously you thought, well, if I just get to here, then everything will be going fine. As soon as you get there, there's like another spot. Well, if I just get there, then everything will be. But to answer your question, the big change for me happened when my email list got, I would say when it hit about 12,000. Is when
12,000
people on the email list is when things started to change a little bit. You know, it was like, all right, the audience is promoting it a little bit more on its own. When I launch a product, I'm hitting my goals for like how many people I want to sign up, or, you know, stuff like that. That was what made it. I would say once it got above that, it started to roll a little bit easier.
Did you set out to build a big mailing list, or did that just happen?
Yeah, so I've made a million mistakes, but if there's one thing I did right in the beginning, it was when I started, like from day one, I said, all right, if I want to get good at one thing, what is it? And I chose email marketing and, you know, and building an email list and learning about conversion rates and how to write emails and connect with people over email and all that stuff. So if I could say that I had an expertise, I would probably say it would be with email. So from the very beginning, I signed up for AWeber, and I've used them and I've loved them ever since. And I also spent a lot of time figuring out, you know, how do I make this page convert? How do I, you know, do I test this? What kind of landing pages do I need to use? Where should my calls to action be? Okay, I have, you know, 1,000 people signed up for the email list. What do I do now? Or like, you know, how often do I email them? All that stuff. I've given a lot of thought to that. And that's definitely been, I would say, email marketing. So like building the list and, you know, and connecting with them over email consistently and guest posting have probably been the two biggest factors in my growth. Aside from, you know, this is assuming that you're writing good content on your site, but, you know, two promotional things, those have been the biggest things for building an audience.
Okay. So I know that your industry is very internet marketing based in the nicest possible sort of way. Right. So for somebody who has a regular business, I always encourage them to also keep in touch with their prospects and clients and just, you know, use email marketing a lot more than they're currently doing. Do you think that's a strategy that applies across board, or is that really just most valuable for people on the internet?
Well, yes, to answer your question, it definitely applies across the board because it's not really about email. I mean, we do it through email,
yes.
But it's about its communication, right? And so the way that, you know, who do you know now that doesn't use email? Like 99% of the, you know, the people that you're going to connect with in business, everybody uses email for the most part. So there's no reason to not use it, regardless of what your business is. You know, if you run a swimming pool, you can be emailing, you know, people about the summer deal that you have going on or the new candy you're offering at the concession stand or whatever, right? Like there's a million reasons to connect with people through your business, regardless of where it is. That said, you know, I mean, when you hear about some people with fantastic growth, like, I don't know if you're familiar with AppSumo, they're like Groupon for like software, basically, daily deals for software. Well, their target market is like online programmers and graphic designers and, you know, people like that. So they grew huge, but their whole market is online. That's like, so you have to realize that the numbers will be different based on what your business is. I mean, every situation is unique.
Yeah.
So it does help if your whole market is online. I mean, if you pitch the whole thing about business is like, go where your customers are, right? Well, if you have a product for graphic designers, well, guess what? They hang out online all day. So it would make sense for your product to be online too. But email marketing works for anybody because that's how people communicate now.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, so tell us about your Remora method.
Sure. So it took me a while to build the audience and everything. And then when I did, I was doing these product launches. I had a couple individual products that I had sold. I have like an email course and, you know, and some other stuff. And they were going fine, but each individual product launch was a lot of work. And then once it got done, it was sort of over, you know, like, I mean, you know, money, and then it's like, well, I guess I got to go through all that again. And so what I just started to think about is like, okay, how can I, instead of having these, like, you know, a big push and then money comes in and then you got to, you know, take a month off or 2 months off and prepare for the next one and then do another big push. How do you sort of get that recurring revenue coming in each month? How do you, you know, stabilize the cash flow?
Yeah, stop the feast and famine.
Sure. So in order to stabilize that cash flow, I started to think about different options for membership sites or, you know, for a continual recurring revenue program, whatnot. And at the around that same time, I was getting a lot of questions each week from people in my audience about, you know, just about different issues they were dealing with or what they were struggling with. And the majority of my audience is small business owners or freelancers. And everybody wants more customers, but a lot of people aren't comfortable with selling or doing the marketing part on their own. And so rather than tell them, you need to become a salesman or you need to figure out the marketing piece, I figured a good alternative would just to be to structure a program to show them, well, actually, you don't need to become the salesman. You can just partner with a different business who already has access to your customers, share the profits with them, and then you get customers without having to sell. So everybody wins. So the basic story I tell with the Remora method. So that idea became this course. And okay. The story I tell with the Remora method is there's a small fish called a Remora. And the remora attaches itself to the bottom of a shark. And the shark provides it with transportation through the water, protection from predators. And in exchange, the remora cleans bacteria off of the shark. So just how they have this mutually beneficial relationship going on, you can form a mutually beneficial relationship with someone in your industry. And so you don't have to be the shark, right? You don't have to be the salesman. You can be the remora as long as you have something valuable to provide. And so the whole course is structured around giving people the steps and the framework they need to figure out what is my business or if they, you know, if they haven't started yet, what is my offering? How do I go about structuring that so that I can offer it to a partner? How do I find these partners? Who are the best partners for me? And then how do I match up with them so that and structure the deal so that we both win and everybody makes money on it and the customers end up getting more value in the end? So that's the basic idea behind the course.
It sounds like it's based in your science background, isn't it?
Yeah. I also served a lot of roles. So it did the cash flow stabilization thing.
Yes.
Very specific need that my audience had. And I also, you know, the name of my site is Passive Panda, but I don't really talk about passive income because I think it's mostly, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about how much work goes into particular blog posts or whatever, yeah. But everybody gets wrapped up in the idea of passive income. I'm kind of tired of
multiple income streams and people just go about saying stuff like that without really understanding what's involved.
I get tired of all the bad advice that's spread around online. And so I would rather produce something that's like, look, what this really is about, what business really is about is relationships. Yes. And if you can structure a couple good key relationships for whatever the product or services you're offering, then you can succeed. You don't need the ebook and the 50,000 person email list and the passive income stream and all this other stuff, right? It doesn't have to be that hard. You don't need to put it in 5 years of work to build an audience before you can sell your first product or whatever. I mean, you can, if you have something valuable to offer, then you don't have to do the sales and marketing piece. You can partner with someone today and find a customer.
Wow. Because I know that works, but normally you would expect that you still have to do some amount of sales and marketing. But
I guess it's, you know, yes, you do, but it's all, so I'll give you here, this works best if you have an example.
Right? Okay.
So let me go ahead and give you an example. So there was a small clothing company, yeah. Right? Sold these high-end Japanese kimonos, these silk kimonos, all right? And it was a pretty luxury product. They sold a lot of luxury goods. And so they said, well, what type of people buy our clothes? What type of people buy these luxury products? And they decided that if someone shopped and bought like a BMW car, then that would be the type of the same
right.
Type who would buy a high-end clothing, right?
Yes.
So they went to a BMW dealership and they said, all right, for anyone who buys a new car from you, we'll give you a free voucher for a $100 silk kimono. So, you know, it'll just be something free that you can give to your customers. And when they buy a car, you'll say, hey, by the way, here's a special gift from us. You can get a $100 silk kimono for free just for buying this car. So they did that. The BMW dealership said yes. And then when these customers started getting their vouchers, they came into the store. And they came in to get their free kimono. And they said, all right, you know, I'd like to redeem this. And they said, great. Go ahead, have a look around the store. The kimonos are right there on the rack. Pick out whatever you'd like. When you're done, just bring it up to the counter. And so what happened is that those kimonos cost about $16 for the store to make, all right? Yeah. And they sold them for $100. So they gave up $16, basically. But each customer that came in with that voucher ended up spending $400 in total. So they paid $16 to get $400 in sales. And that's a perfect example of how... how anybody can take their product or their service. This, you don't have to sell a physical good, but you can partner with someone who already has access to your ideal customer. And if you give a little value so that the other side wins and the customer wins, then it's likely that you're going to win at the same time. And that's how you can structure those type of partnerships. And that's the type of thing that I teach in the Remora method. That's what the whole course is based around, is that principle.
I love the fact that you said the customer wins, because I think sometimes as business owners, we just focus on us winning. But if you help your customers to win more often, then they are more likely to stay with you and refer you to other people and just bring you more business. So I think it's very important that your customers win as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And that's what makes really successful partnerships. That's what makes them work. It's hard because when you start a business, especially in the beginning, you know, if you're trying to get the business off the ground, you're trying to earn more money, it's difficult because your interest is, I mean, it's right there, right? It's a pressing need. Like, you need to make sales so that you can pay for, you know, your business or your livelihood or whatever. And it's, so it's really easy to put your interests first, but If you can force yourself to put the customer's needs first, to put your partner's needs first, if you're going to form a partnership, then most of the time you will win as well. And a lot of times that partnership will be much more successful than if you just, you know, I mean, nobody wants to feel like someone's just, you know.
Ripping them off, yeah. Wow, right? That is wonderful advice. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so can you tell us about the top three tools, paid or unpaid, you've used in your business that you couldn't possibly live without?
Yeah, I thought about this a little bit. I have three that are very important. A lot of the ones that I use, you know, you could swap them, right? For, you know, I mean, I could live without them because there are other alternatives. But these three are, I think, are pretty important for the way that I run my business. So the first I've already mentioned, that's AWeber. Yeah. I use them for email marketing, and they're a little bit pricier than some of the other alternatives out there for when you're getting started, but I think it's totally worth every penny. It works really well. Their deliverability rates are awesome. And my email list is the livelihood of my business. I mean, that's how most of my money. So AWeber's one. WordPress is another, you know, that I run all my websites on WordPress. So I taught myself how to code over the last year or two, and that's helped a lot, but having the WordPress framework to work off of has been crucial. And then the third one that, you know, there are alternatives to, but that's really important for me right now, is ClickBank. I use ClickBank as my payment vendor for a lot of my courses, and they take care of a lot of stuff that business owners don't think about. So, you know, for example, in the United States, some states have different tax rates.
Yeah.
And they take care of that for you. If you have an affiliate program, they'll run it all for you and pay your affiliates for you. When it comes to processing payments, they do all that for you. And I think the most critical piece is that for any small business, you need to get paid on time. Cash flow is huge. And ClickBank pays on time every single time. And they've done, that's like one of their big selling points, is that they've done that for, you know, 10 years now or however long it's been, that they've never missed a payment. And you know, you need to have something reliable like that for your cash flow, especially in the beginning. Once you start earning more, you got a little bit more leeway. But I would say those three have been big for me.
It's interesting. The three you've given are a content management system, some way of getting your message to your audience. And then you've given the AWeber for nurturing that relationship, and then ClickBank for collecting your money.
You really need for a business. You know, I mean, it's easy to make it harder, but you just need a way to get in touch with people and a way for them to pay you.
Yeah, brilliant. So tell us about your proudest moment to date.
Oh, man, I don't know. That's a tough one. I feel like most, to be perfectly honest, I think most of my proudest moments have nothing to do with business. You know, it has to do with friends and family and all that stuff. But as far as a business moment that I'm proud of, I guess it wasn't so much a particular moment as the process within that first year of business of going from nothing is here, right? Like it never existed, to now you have something, right? You have an audience, you have a business, you have a business that's paying for your livelihood, right? And so it's really cool to be able to create that, to say, you know, I didn't have anything. And you think about being in the same position as everybody else where, you know, people are looking for jobs and all kinds of stuff where you're dependent on someone else to approve of you or to give you permission to earn a living. And going from that to saying, I got my own back, right? Like I, you know, I was able to pick myself up and to create something that can fund my livelihood. So I, you know, it takes, sometimes it's easy to get wrapped up in the day-to-day work and not appreciate how much work it took to get there.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something. If I step back and think about it, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, because there's so many businesses going out of business every day. So every day you survive and make good money and just stay in business, that's something to be proud of, I guess.
Yeah, sure. That's a great way to think of it. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of times people say like, oh, the key to happiness is like living in the moment, right? And living in the moment's huge, but I think one way to do that is to be grateful, right? So like gratefulness is a big, it's big to look back on your business success or even like you said, the day-to-day success of just staying in business and to be grateful for that, because it doesn't matter how much money you earn. Yeah, I mean, happiness is something else entirely, right? So like it's important to be grateful about wherever you're at in the process so that you can remain happy while building a business.
Perfect. I like your whole philosophy of happiness and just being grateful, because I think sometimes in business you just lose focus of that and you think it's all about money and just getting your name out there and doing this and that. But if you took the moment to just sit back, why are you doing this? And is it really making you, for me, it was all about a work-life balance and I've achieved that with my business. So every day I should be pretty grateful, but sometimes you just forget.
There's actually, I've done a decent amount of research in positive psychology, and there's this interesting twist where a lot of people think that to be happy, you need to achieve X success or Y success, right? You need to like, once I get to here, I'll be happy. But it's actually the complete opposite, where you need to be happy with where you are, but still be interested in becoming better, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of what you're hinting at there. And it's definitely, it's easy to lose sight of that. So it's important to remember it.
Okay, I'm going to ask a really controversial question here. So how is it different from complacency?
Well, the first thing is, it's an individual choice, right? And nobody can tell you what's right or wrong for you. So you have to decide that for yourself. And if you're happy with where you are, then, I mean, what else is there than to be happy, right? Than to be happy with your life. So that's an individual choice. But with regards to complacency, I think the difference is not in becoming complacent with where you're at, but in saying, I'm happy with who I am, but I know that I can still become better, right? And so that's like a tough balance to strike.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. Anyway, so let's move on. So have you had any mentors since you started?
So formally, I guess I shouldn't say that I've had mentors. Like I don't have someone I check in with every month. I have a mastermind group that I work with, but you know, they're more peers than mentors.
Is that a paid mastermind or?
Is it what?
Is there a paid mastermind group?
Oh no, it's just three of us friends who all started businesses and we decided to meet up together each month. It's not paid. So I have that group, but I haven't had any formal mentors, so to speak, but I've had a lot of help. I had a lot of guys, you know, Chris Gilbo, Corbett Barr, Scott Dinsmore, Derek Halpern, Adam Baker, all those guys have been very helpful at different points for me where I've said, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking about doing, or this is what I'm struggling with. And they're all much more experienced than I am, probably much smarter than I am. So it's just nice to have people like that to bounce ideas off of. And honestly, a lot of those relationships just came out of me sending them an email and reaching out. I think, you know, I talk about like, who are your mentors or who are your peers that you look up to or whatever. And a lot of people would think, well, how can I get that? Right. A lot of times it's literally just as simple as sending them an email and saying, hey, I really enjoyed this piece you wrote, or I really like this thing, you know, this piece of your work. I really like whatever this initiative is you're working on. I'd love to talk more about it sometime if you got some time, or I'm doing this and you might be interested in it, whatever, right? You know, like just be friendly. It's really the moral of the story there.
Right. Okay. So you haven't had formal mentors, but you've had a lot of help from peers and people you've reached out to.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the biggest mistake you've made since you started? And what have you learned from it?
I mean, I've made too many mistakes to count, but actually, okay, so this is a good lesson. So I've made a ton of mistakes, right? And I think the reason for that and the lesson in this is that I actually tried things. So like a lot of people online, especially with like, you know, how to get 1,000 people to your website, or here's a new traffic tip, or whatever it is, right? Whatever it is for spreading your message, building your brand online, or building your business, you know, how to get 100 new customers come in tomorrow, whatever. There's all these people giving these tips out. And if you, it's so funny. Sometimes I feel like saying like, put your money where your mouth is, because everybody puts out these tips, and then you go to their site and you look at what they're doing, and nobody's doing it. Like the people who are writing the articles are not following the tips they're writing about. And I'm like, what is the, I don't understand it. So contrary to that, most of the time I try to actually do all these things that people throw out, all these ideas. So I actually like test them, and a lot of them have totally bombed. Like they've been huge. But as part of that, I've found a couple things that have worked. And so the lesson is to try things, because a lot of them are going to fail, but that's the failure. You know, a lot of people say like, oh, you need to be willing to fail. I don't think so much as it, that it's like you're okay with failure. It's just that failure is part of the cost of finding success, right? And so I think that's huge. You know, I've made way too many mistakes to remember, but that's been the cost of figuring out the things that actually worked.
Were these costly mistakes or just mistakes of time and effort? Because some people make mistakes that cost them their business.
Sure. And I've made, well, I haven't made a mistake that's cost me my business, but I've made mistakes for both. So there have been plenty of time wastes and effort wastes and all that stuff. That's probably been the most common mistake, right? Is that you spend time on something that it was just a total waste of time. But I've also had articles or ideas or emails that I've sent out. Man, I remember I sent out this one email, and I had so many people unsubscribe that.
Oh my God, that subscribe is so painful.
In that sense, I have lost money, because those people, those were people who, one, were already paying attention because they opened the email and read it, and they were like, I don't like this, and so I unsubscribed. So I already had their attention. I mean, it's one thing to get someone on the email list. It's another to get them to open your emails consistently. So they were paying attention. And if I hadn't sent out this, you know, this terrible email, then they might, you know, I might've won them over. They might've been interested in enough with me. If I gave them a little bit more value over the next month, maybe they would have bought something. So,
well, there are two sides to it. Maybe those people never have bought from you.
It's possible, right? And you never know that. But so many people unsubscribed from that particular message that I know that it was just a complete failure.
can you share with us exactly what that email is, so that somebody can learn from it and not have to not make the same mistake and go through what you went through?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I pitched an affiliate product in that email, and I haven't done that since. You know, I'm not big. I'm trying to move away from affiliate revenue in pretty much all senses, because I want to have a business that runs on its own that, you know, I could potentially sell. But it was just, I don't know, it was just a mistake. I didn't do it. I haven't done it like that since, and it's worked out much better.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And thank you for sharing as well. Because when you see unsubscribe, after you've worked so hard to get some names on your email list, when you see unsubscribes, it is painful. It can just break your positive psychology in a few seconds.
Well, and I should say, like, it's not, I happen to pitch an affiliate product in that email, but it that isn't to say like you shouldn't do that, or that it's not possible to do it well. I just did it poorly. You know, it depends on how you do it and what your audience is expecting, and how good of a fit it is for them, and, you know, also how you share the content, you know, but whatever. I wanted to try something new, and I did, and it didn't work. But that's you know, it's just a lesson. I mean, you have to do those things. You have to actually try things to figure out what worked.
Yeah, at least you tried it. Okay. So, you've mentioned how you've tried to generate recurring income to kind of stabilize your cash flow. Is there anything else you're doing along those lines apart from having the membership option in your business?
No, I mean, once I have a recurring revenue, I mean, and that, well, yes. So at first I was going to say no, that's the basic idea of recurring revenue. But actually there are a couple things. So I strategically time my product launches so that when, so like, let's say I did one 8 weeks ago and then maybe I'll do one, 6 weeks after that. Well, I time them on the calendar so that payments roll in every week. Instead of, just all at the beginning of the month or all at the end of the month or whatever. So I try to, not only do I have them coming in every month because it's a recurring monthly product, but I try to space out the launches at different times of the month so that I'm getting paid every single week as opposed to, just a big sum at one side or the other. And that gives a little bit more flexibility too, with the cash flow in the business and what you can do, how many projects you can be running at the same time, when you can answers and when you can't, all that.
So it's looking at your timeline and seeing how you can make some changes
Sure.
to, yeah, okay. So can you tell me if somebody was to start, somebody wanted to do what you're doing now and they were going to start today, what would you tell them to do differently?
Well, the first thing I would do differently, just based on my experience, I would have launched a product sooner. I didn't launch. I spent 6 months
Sorry.
of my business building the audience, and then I launched a product. I would have, if I had to do it today, I'd have something to sell from day one. And preferably, it would either be a high ticket item, so either like, consulting for, whatever, so some consulting package for a couple $1,000, or speaking, as a speaker for, I'll speak at your event for $10,000 or whatever, some high ticket item, or a recurring revenue product, so that you can either have a big win if someone pays you, or you have, something you can count on a little more consistently.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. So, what project are you currently working on?
So right now, as we've talked, my main focus is the Remora method and trying to improve the content within that course, get more people involved in it, just improve that in pretty much all aspects. And I'm going to continue to grow that for the next 6 months to a year, before I look to get something for me or hire, sell it off or whatever. So that'll be my main focus. But I'm also slowly transitioning more into the health and medicine stuff that I mentioned at the beginning. The things that are my true passions and the things that I really feel like, I can work on and make a big difference in the world with. So that'll be going on at jamesclear.com, and I'm slowly building that out, but it's really coming along. And right now I'm doing some work with the American Red Cross, where I'm working with their logistics division for improving their like emergency preparations and disaster relief services.
Wow.
So that's, I'm slowly transitioning more into the healthcare side of things. And I'm really going to be, I mean, I'll just be upfront about it. I'm really going to be focused on making a big difference in that area. So that's probably where you'll see more of me if you're paying attention to me in a year or two. But for now, the Remora method will take a lot of my time for the next 6 months.
So how did you get involved with the Red Cross?
I actually work on the disaster action team for the Red Cross. So, if there's a hurricane or a fire or a flood, I'll respond to that disaster and provide services to the people who are affected by it as part of the disaster action team. But so that was how I first got started. But I've also been working a little bit more with their regional department, specifically in the logistics division, but also with community outreach and some of the partnerships that they form with providers on process improvement. How do we develop, for example, how do we develop a checklist for a particular disaster response? And then once you have the checklist, well, that's great, but how do you get people to follow it? So there's a lot of behavioral psychology in it. There's a lot of, process improvement and structuring, making sure that our resources are allocated in the right way. And really the basic question that you're trying to solve there is, how do you get people to take the right action at the right time more consistently? And that's a lot of what my work in healthcare will be focused on as well, is I think a lot of the issues that we deal with and on a day-to-day basis, most of the problems in medicine, we already have the answer to. You don't need a new blockbuster drug or a new technology to solve them. It's just getting the team and the care provider to do the right thing at the right time more consistently. So that's been a really good experience for me. But yeah, the Red Cross has been great so far, and I'm looking forward to working with more.
Oh, brilliant. So you've managed to achieve so much in the last 18 months. Can you just share how you get things done? Some of your tips for managing your time and being productive?
Yeah. So from a productivity standpoint, it's funny because a lot of times I feel like I'm not productive and I'm just wasting time. The basic idea is this. The only productivity tip anybody ever needs, if you actually followed it every day, you know, I know this tip and I still don't do it every day. And that's just do the most important thing first each day. If you do whatever the most important thing is the first each day, then you'll get it done and you'll have done something important every single day. And by the time you get to the end of the year, if you do 365 important things, I mean, something good's going to happen. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I have really tried to shift from consuming to creating. And that's a big shift for a lot of people. If you think about what the majority of us do on a day-to-day basis, we consume, right? We watch TV, we read, we, you know, whatever it happens to be. And you don't create your own content or your own, you know, story or your own pictures or video or whatever it may be. So focusing on creating rather than consuming is a big shift. You know, if you catch yourself throughout the day and ask yourself, like, am I creating or consuming right now? Most of the time you'll be consuming. You'll be reading an email or you'll be browsing another article online or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Or you'll be looking at another course about how to build a business that you should buy, right? When really, if you just spent your time creating, you'd probably figure it out on your own. And that leads into my last productivity tip, which is start before you're ready. It's so easy productivity wise to be like, oh, I need to plan a little bit more. Or I need to write out my to-do list, or I need to, you know, read a little bit more of this before I can get started. Every successful person I've ever seen starts before they're ready. And that you know, includes day-to-day tasks, just little things that you need to get done that maybe you feel like, oh, I should plan for this for another 10 minutes. And it includes really big things like building a business. And you're like, well, I'm 6 months away or whatever. Just start before you're ready. And when you do, then, you know, great things are going to happen.
Oh, my God. I love the three tips you just gave so much, because I think, although I have the focus on creating things, I think I probably consume more than I create, because I'm always reading, I'm always doing something. So I'm going to bear that in mind, the two C's. Am I creating or consuming? That's perfect.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's a really easy trap to fall into, but if you can catch yourself.
Yeah. That's the thing, catching yourself when you're doing the wrong thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I was over at your blog today, and you said you've been interviewing some millionaire entrepreneurs. And you had found out some trends. Could you share a few of those here today?
Sure. Well, some of it has to do with what I just mentioned with, you know, starting before you're ready and doing things that maybe you don't feel ready to do. Because I found that a lot of the people who have achieved that kind of success, they do the things that that a lot of people find excuses or reasons to not do. So that's definitely one of them. And then I think that there's also this myth about, like, oh, you gotta catch your big break, right? Or like, you need to, luck is this thing that, you know, that'll hit you, you know, when you work hard, like, you know, there'll be like one big win, you know, you'll get featured in the New York Times or you'll get featured on the front page of Yahoo or, you know, whatever, you'll win this business competition and then everything will be easier after that. And what I found from most of these entrepreneurs, these millionaires, is that there's not really this one big break that happens for them. They don't really have this, you know, this lucky moment where it's like, oh, business all of a sudden worked. Like, luck, one thing I like to say is that luck just opens doors. It doesn't like walk through them.
Yeah.
And for most of the millionaires I talked to, it was the same way for them, right? Like, sure, they had somebody they knew, or they had a process that they went about that, you know, that offered a lucky opportunity, but it didn't walk through the door for them. It just opened it up. And so I would say let go of the idea of you're going to catch a big break. You'll get a guest post on this site or somebody will feature you and then everything will be easy after that. Those are just parts of the process and you have to continue walking through the door.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. This was just supposed to be a 30-minute interview and it's been almost an hour.
Well, I hope I didn't talk too much. I have a tendency to...
No, I really enjoyed it. But I have one last question for you and it's about Passive Panda. How did you come up with that name? That's the last question. No more questions after that.
Well, so when I started, the goal has always been to build a business that could pay for me going to medical school. And at the beginning, I thought that, oh, hey, I really didn't know much about the whole online space. And I came across a couple sites that were talking about passive income and, you know, you could make money while not being attached to the business and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds kind of interesting. And then I also wanted a gender neutral name, you know, something that both men and women could sort of adhere to. And so I just chose an animal. And it's a good name in the sense that it's like relatively easy to remember.
Yeah,
and
it's very memorable.
Like, oh yeah, your name's great, which I think was sort of an indication that my content wasn't good at all because nobody was commenting about what I was writing. They'd just be like, yeah, nice name. It turns out that, you know, a year and a half later, I really don't write about passive income at all. I talk about business strategy. I talk about my marketing. And some of the passive income stuff will work their way in there. But the reality is passive income will only follow you after you've done a lot of hard work. Seth Godin has a ton of passive income from all his best-selling books. But guess what? He spent years building an audience and writing all those books and everything. And now he can sit back and enjoy it. But he put 20 years of work in before that, right? So, or probably even more than that. But that's the basic story of the name.
It's a very memorable name. And your blog is fantastic. You give a lot of valuable information on there. So it's not just the name. It's everything about Passive Panda. It's really good.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much, James, once again. And if you're listening to this, don't forget to check out James' site, passivepanda.com, for more tips on how to just be a better person in business, in your employment, or as a freelancer. So thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Griselda.